something a little Illuminati, right. A soup con of, you know, devil worship.
And De Morin Schild came from a rich, noble family of minks. Minsk.
Jerry Lewis.
Hey, lady.
To start from Serbia.
Fudge. I was faking it for the podcast.
Hey, sister.
Hey there, sister.
And hey again, listeners. It's one of your favorite type of episodes, the extemporaneous style.
Woo!
Where we're flying blind. I'm Amanda, and I have never seen a single second of the television programs The Bachelor or The Bachelorette.
My name is Christine, and I have not either.
I do like reality TV shows, but I don't like the messy parts of reality TV shows. And I think that's why I haven't seen The Bachelor.
Because it's all messy parts.
Yes.
Which I'm going to go 90% of people. They probably watch reality TV strictly for the messy parts.
I don't know how, because like, for example, I'm currently watching Ink Masters, and I've never seen any. So I started from the beginning and there's like, I don't know, 13 seasons or something like that. I have now learned that I just fast forward through the parts.
The non-competition parts.
Yes. Because I don't want to hear people arguing.
Yeah.
And it drives me crazy and it ruins it for me. But I like to see them do the tattoos and comment on the tattoos. Yeah. So
Ink Master's a bad example because there is a lot of drama on Ink Master.
Oh, yeah.
But do you remember, was the show called Face Off with the special?
Oh,
my God. That was such a good show.
It was.
And I felt like they minimized drama between the cast members. Like, I really feel like it was like everyone was sort of really supportive of each other.
Yes.
And it was just all about like doing the makeups and doing the latex masks. And
yeah. And that's why I like shows like Making It or even Lego Masters, Great British Bake Off.
Yes.
Ones where everyone's kind of nice.
Yeah. Like where you're like, we're all in the same boat,
yes.
Even though we're competing against each other, but we're all turned on by the same things, obviously. Like we all like to bake or we like to do Legos or.
But maybe, you know, maybe we could push ourselves out of the comfort zone and get a bit more drama in the extemporaneous style.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of how I can start some drama. My cats are cuter than your cats.
You go to hell. You go straight to hell, Amanda.
Speaking of drama, no, I'm just kidding. This, there's nothing dramatic about this. I'm bringing back a little segment
that we
thought of when we said we were going to do these extemporaneous ones, which was like the correction of our mistakes.
Yes.
And we were going to call it a Susan of soup cons.
Or so, I was going to call it a soup con of soup cons because I can never remember how to say it correctly.
So our Susan of soup cons, it's not technically a correction. We didn't technically do something wrong, but we did something that I wanted to address.
Yes.
And specifically, this was in the Phantom Time Hypothesis episode. And the thing that we did in that episode is I consistently and throughout the whole thing referred to dates as being either BC or AD.
Right.
So BC meaning before Christ and AD standing for Anno Domini, which means in the year of our Lord,
yes.
Or in the year of the Lord. I wanted to bring this up. I wanted to address it because we know that that is no longer the terms that are used. They've decided to come up with more neutral or inclusive terms because, you know, not everyone's a Christian.
Yeah.
Like it's just as obvious as that. There are plenty of historians, archaeologists, whatever, that do not follow this idea that there was ever a figure called Christ and that we should somehow be basing our timeline on this person who may or may not have even existed and who may or may not be my personal Lord or Savior.
Right.
But even though I knew that this was not the most neutral term to use, I still used it exclusively in that episode because so much of the point of the episode was that the Catholic Church set this standard of chronology that we still refer to today. Obviously, the more accepted terms, the more neutral terms that are used today are BCE, which stands for Before Common Era, and CE, which stands for Common Era. But I will say that, I mean, and you, I think you are going to dispute me on this, but I'm almost positive that despite the fact that they came up with these more neutral terms, it's still based on the chronology that kind of places the birth of Christ as the like starting point and ending point.
Like year one.
Correct.
And actually, I wasn't going to dispute that. That is what it's based on, I think.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny that they're like, oh, well, we need to come up with, you know, more like neutral terms. And you did, but it's still based on the birth of a magical baby.
Yeah. What I wonder is, what is before Christ actually? Because that's English. So what is the B word?
Oh, yeah. That's actually a really good point. I have no idea. Yeah. Why is Anno Domini in Latin, which makes sense, but BC...
I can't find anything.
I mean, everything says before Christ.
Yeah. But does that mean that they didn't call it BC and AD until English?
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess it wouldn't have been implemented until the 1500s, right? Is that when it was implemented? When they switched over to the Julian, the Gregorian calendar. When they switched calendar to the Gregorian calendar. And this is out of Wikipedia. The Anno Domini dating system was devised in 525 by Dionysius Exiguus to enumerate the years in his Easter table.
He doesn't sound like he speaks English, though.
No, he doesn't.
Huh, that is so weird. I never even thought of that before.
Yeah, and it's also weird because I don't see where they talk about where BC started to be used.
If any scholars are listening.
Oh, okay. This is interesting. Traditionally, the abbreviation AD is placed before the year number.
Oh.
And BC is always placed after the year number. So for instance, it would be AD 2021, but 68 BC. That was another thing we talked about when we recorded, and we just changed it all to just go after the year.
It's so weird because I would swear that I've almost always heard people use it 1623 AD, not the other way around.
Although it's funny though, because if you say the Latin as it stands, like in the year of our Lord, 2021.
Yes.
I just wanted to mention that because I realize BC and AD is kind of it's outdated. People aren't really using it as much. But for that episode, I made a choice. I made an executive decision that it made the most sense just to go with it.
And I think it was the right decision because we were talking about Catholicism.
Any other soup cons that we wanted to address?
It was pointed out to me that in our last extemporaneous style, we talked about Oumuamua. And I think at some point in the episode, we said that Oumuamua came from outside the galaxy.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't. It came from outside the solar system.
Oh,
so it was still from within the galaxy, but not in the solar system.
Yes. Now that you say that, it absolutely 100% rings true. And you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I was told, I 100% believe that to be correct. Right. But at the same time, I also don't know anything about space. So.
I know. It is weird because in my head, I do equate them as being the same thing.
Like, I do too.
Our solar system is the Milky Way.
Yes.
No, our solar system is within the galaxy known as the Milky Way.
So it's us and our collection of 8/9 planets.
Right.
If you count do you know what I'm talking about? Apparently, some people believe that there's another planet behind Jupiter. Because I guess it's like so far away from the sun that it's difficult to. And the only reason they think that that is the truth is because of the orbit of the various moons around Jupiter, is what I think. Probably needs its own episode. Maybe. Who knows what lives on that planet?
I mean, I would like to hear more about that.
Yeah, I'll look it up for next time.
Okay. That was totally just a boneheaded.
Definitely like, a soup con.
Yeah, definitely a soup con.
But we appreciate it when you point those out to us.
We're big dum-dums. We won't know. Unless you tell us, we will not know.
Unless you hit our nose with the newspaper, we won't know. So if you'd like to tell us something about a correction, a comment, something we're doing right, something we could improve on, feel free to hit us up on Instagram at the Paranoid Style Pod.
The episode that we just released was about Project Kansas, aka New Coke conspiracy, which is interesting because I knew just in general terms about the New Coke conspiracy, but I had no idea that Coca-Cola had this whole like project name behind it. In hindsight, it makes sense that they would set up this, you know?
Yeah, I had no idea. And they had a whole bunch of these different projects. There was a project for Diet Coke, Project Harvard, I think that one was.
The one for Tab.
And it makes sense because you want to keep these things undercover so your competition won't find out what you're doing.
Right.
I suppose.
But that topic, it was so much fun. I thought that I'd had original conspiracy theories about New Coke because my theory that I thought was original, it was not. I thought that they introduced New Coke so that they could secretly replace sugar with high fructose corn syrup in Coke Original and then bring it back and people will be like, yeah, yeah, this is what I remember. I love it. But that is not true.
So that theory was blown out of the water. I absolutely thought that that was true. And it wasn't that the high fructose corn syrup was actually introduced into Coke about 5 years before New Coke was released. So it was already out in America.
Although I guess I do still kind of sort of believe that it could have been a conspiracy. Is it conspiracy if it's corporate?
I think it's especially conspiracy if
it's
corporate.
It is, but it's also kind of like your day-to-day practices.
Just like a plan.
Yeah. This is our plan.
As a super clever reverse psychology marketing experiment.
I do kind of still think that that could be true. But on the flip side of that, Coca-Cola, did you really need any additional help?
Yeah.
Considering how much of the world you dominate?
I think in the episode, we sort of rejected it as being because of statements from Coca-Cola themselves,
right,
saying that they didn't do it as a super clever marketing idea. Like, why would they reveal that? But knowing how intense the marketing was for Coca-Cola since its very introduction, like as soon as Asa Candler got a hold of it, he immediately began producing tchotchkes with the Coca-Cola logo on it and commercials and just very specific instructions about what the commercials should be like and contain. A company that is that, I'm trying to think of the word for this.
Dedicated?
Yeah, like anal retentive about their marketing strategy. They really didn't have any idea that New Coke was going to be controversial.
Right. I think maybe even a bigger conspiracy, though, is this. How did New Coke get rejected? And yet we have something called Beverly that is still being produced, as far as I know, by the Coca-Cola company.
Oh, Beverly. In 2008,
yeah, I think it was,
we were lucky to be able to attend Dragon Con in Atlanta, Georgia. And Dragon Con is a big multi-fandom convention. It's
a huge multi-fandom
convention. Yeah, it's not. I was surprised. I don't think I really realized how many different kinds of fandoms there were and like having them all under one roof. But it's like Star Wars, Star Trek.
Furries. Zombies.
Robotics.
Every kind of comic
macrame.
Ever.
I mean, even some like crafts.
The Tesla people.
Yeah.
I guess they were steampunk.
Yeah.
But it seemed very, I don't know.
True Blood.
Yeah.
So we went and I found it super fun and I would definitely go again. But we weren't exactly, we weren't dressed up.
No.
I mean, we were very spectator participants in Dragon Con.
Yes. And can I tell you what I chalk that up to? Because I love all nerdy things. I could not choose, even if I wanted to try. What do I want to be? I couldn't even choose. I just love it all.
You have to wear a costume to Dragon Con, though. What are you picking?
Sunnydale vampire cheerleader.
I like it.
It's really hot and humid in Atlanta, even in September.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah. So it seems like a costume. And the rooms are packed with people. I mean, maybe less so in the COVID year, but the rooms are packed with people and it's really warm in there. So it seems like the cheerleader outfit, it's going to be really cool and breezy. You throw on some vampire teeth. People love Buffy. I love Buffy.
It's interesting that you say that because I was thinking that you were going to go just straight horror. But Buffy, but that is actually has a horror element with the vampire.
You show your bite on your neck bleeding down, your cheerleading outfit. I think you can make it work.
I think you absolutely could. One of my favorite costumes that we saw, there were amazing costumes, but one of my favorite was seeing a person in cardboard boxes
as
a robot doing the time warp at the Rocky Horror show.
That guy was amazing.
I mean, it was literally just cardboard boxes, like a slightly smaller cardboard box on the head and then a larger one on the body.
It's like how you would have made your robot costume back in the late 70s, basically. Spray painted a couple of cardboard boxes and fit them around your body.
Very that.
And God bless him, his dedication, because it could not have been easy. I assume he wore it all day. We just saw him doing the time warp at a special Rocky Horror screening in the evening time. But I assume he was probably walking around in that thing all day long.
I agree. And even if he just wore it to the Rocky Horror thing, he was still like packed into rows of people and had to maneuver into that auditorium at the very least, yeah. Which was a lot of dedication.
Wherever you are, robot man, we salute you.
We definitely do.
But talking about Dragon Con, yes. I know where you were going with this.
Yes, it took me a long way to get there. But as part of the stuff that we did while we were there, we went to the World of Coca-Cola. The World of Coca-Cola, it's basically the headquarters of Coca-Cola in Atlanta. I don't know if it's their corporate headquarters. It's more like a museum.
It's more like a museum. I doubt it's their actual corporate headquarters.
The formula for Coke is allegedly there. Mm-hmm. They moved it to a vault from the bank where they had kept it. And it's on display, although I do not remember seeing it.
Actually, I'm not going to lie to you, sister. Pretty much the only thing I remember about that trip to the World of Coca-Cola was the tasting room. Oh my God. It's this massive space and it has these, I don't know, I'm going to say there was at least 20 to 30 different islands in this space. And each island has a soda machine. And each soda machine, obviously, it has about, you know, six different soda spouts.
Yeah, I think I read there's 200 different products or something, or 500 products maybe.
And we tasted every single one.
We really did.
And it was so sick and sticky.
Looking back in the time of COVID, it seems like,
I mean, you know.
But on the other hand, we weren't, you get your own cup.
I mean, unless you were sucking it straight out of the spout, in which case, Christine, I should have kept a better eye on you.
I cannot remember anything that I loved enough to suck it out of the spout.
There was something pineapple.
Oh, yeah,
I swear it was from, oh, that was the other really fun thing is that all of these products, not all of them are sold in the United States. A lot of the products are exclusively in certain countries.
For example, the Grotesque Beverly is an Italian soda.
And actually,
my apologies to anyone listening to us in Italy.
Italy.
Americans do not have the same taste
profile. Italy. What is going on with your palate?
Bitter. So bitter.
I feel like all of the Italian Coca-Cola products were bitter.
Yes. Like, maybe they all contained quinine. like that kind of strange tonic water, which I actually don't mind tonic water, but when you're thinking soda.
No.
It was like tonic times 10.
It was
10.
Like earwax.
It tasted like carbonated earwax.
Yeah.
It was weird.
And I swear, my favorite one was a South African drink.
I swear it was like
a pineapple flavored soda and it was delicious.
Yeah.
Although quite frankly, after drinking Beverly, I suppose anything.
Right. Plus after a while, once you've tried a lot of them, it definitely your taste buds are a little bit questioning your life choices.
Yes.
It's a good segue to our next segment where we are going to taste test.
We're doing the Pepsi taste challenge.
We're going to take the new Coca-Cola Zero Sugar, which is new Coke Zero, although it's not called that. When I read about it, I literally thought it was going to be called new Coke Zero.
I'm sure they have PTSD from the last time they changed their product name though.
So it does not say that. It says Coca-Cola Zero Sugar.
Okay. Do you remember drinking new Coke when it came out? Because I do. You already drank Diet Coke or something at the time.
No, I have no recollection of new Coke
as a kid. So I used to eat sugar straight out of the sugar bowl. So of course I had no problem with new Coke, but I liked new Coke. I liked the taste of it. And I always wondered, why couldn't it have been another product? Right now you can go to the store and get Coca-Cola, Diet Coke, Coke Zero, Coca-Cola with mango. Like they have new like
vanilla,
fruit infused.
Cherry.
Yeah, cherry. So why couldn't it have been a classic Coke and a new Coke situation?
I definitely think at the time there was much less of that. Yeah. So maybe New Coke did kind of pave the way for multiple flavors of a single drink.
Yeah.
I think at the time, though, maybe they were thinking sort of along the lines of transitioning from Tab to Diet Coke. If you made things too complicated and you didn't keep that same name, like the, well, I mean, obviously New Coke was called Coke, but maybe they were thinking that they would end up fracturing their drinking audience.
Yeah.
But I don't know why that would be a problem other than you then have to produce all of those things. And I've always wondered, and I'm not sure this is a conspiracy, but I think it's borders on conspiracy. Like, how do supermarkets stock certain things? So to get your product in a prominent place with enough supplies to make money off of it, isn't there some kind of supermarket payola?
We're now going to do the Pepsi challenge. Stand by while we get our Pepsi taste challenged ready to go, and then we'll be right back to continue with our experiment in,
yes,
in hydration. No, in dehydration.
In dehydration.
And we're back.
And we're back.
And you know what I've always said, Christine?
What?
That nothing goes better than lots of technology and sticky brown fluid. I feel like this is a
recipe for soda-soaked disaster.
Okay, so in front of us, we now each have four anonymous brown liquids.
They're all soda, right?
Or are they? Ultimately, we're determining in our blind taste test which one of these liquids wins out as the supreme soda.
Okay.
Okay.
My first cup, which is the least carbonated looking of the drinks, and it tastes kind of like nothing to me.
Ooh. Oh,
no, I do not.
Oh,
like
whoa.
That.
Wait, this legit tastes off to me.
I agree. One of them tastes wrong.
Yeah, this one tastes wrong.
Like sewage.
Like moldy or something. I mean, it doesn't smell weird. I don't see anything floating in it.
My first cup, I'm going to say, tasted like nothing. Number two was bubbly, but didn't look bubbly. Three tasted moldy.
But it still wasn't your least favorite?
No, it was my least favorite.
Oh, okay. Oh, three as in the third one you drank.
Yes.
I got it. I thought it was ranked number three. Maurice, what are you eating off the carpet? Maurice, you are not supposed to be doing the carpet taste challenge.
How does it taste, Maurice?
Color-wise, I really thought that there was going to be a lot of variation in color, and there's none.
One thing I will say about the one that tastes like nothing, I do like the carbonation level of it.
The low carbonation level of it?
I think this one has the lowest carbonation level. All right. What's your number four?
My number four is...
impossible to read.
MC.
Mexican Coke from a glass bottle made with 60% sugar cane and 40% high fructose corn syrup.
Interesting. It didn't taste like sugar to me, though.
No, it does not taste like sugar to me, and I don't know.
I do not like it.
The other reason why soda...
Ew. Ugh. That one tastes bad.
It tastes bad. Okay.
So we should both have to stop mom from drinking the rest of it.
No, she'll be fine. She'll be fine. All right. What was your number three?
My number three was
Coke Zero. Really? My number three was Deep Penetration. Oh no, Diet Pepsi. DP.
Diet Pepsi.
Diet Pepsi.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Oh my God, number two?
Number two. Okay, so we differed on that one. Yours
we
was
did.
Coke Zero.
Yes.
Mine was Diet Pepsi. Okay.
No.
I don't believe it.
I also don't believe it.
My number two was Diet Coke.
So was mine.
I thought Diet Coke would be my number one.
I also thought that. Holy that shit. Means...
you did the Pepsi challenge and you actually picked Pepsi.
Now I do have to belch. Maybe doing a soda tasting challenge on a podcast isn't the best idea.
I mean, it's got to be one of the worst. So we have a listener question.
For the first time, an actual listener question.
For the first time, an actual listener question. This is so exciting. Steve S. writes in, tell me what you know about Jimmy Hoffa.
And I'll tell you what I knew about Jimmy Hoffa. I thought he was Al Capone. The only thing, when I first thought about it, I'm like, oh my God, that whole Geraldo thing where he was going to try to find Jimmy Hoffa's grave. But he wasn't. That was Al Capone's
vault or something. Yeah,
some weird thing. But in my head, those two things were connected. What do you know about Jimmy Hoffa?
I know that he was the president of the Teamsters Labor Union. He was a union guy, and he was like a really important union guy. During his time as president, he more than doubled the amount of workers who were unionized. There was this whole thing where he was able to basically get all truck drivers under a single union umbrella. And those are all like really, in my opinion, I'm pro-union. So those are all really good, positive things.
Yes.
However.
And this was in the 1960s.
Correct. Yes. And I mean, he may have become president earlier than that. He was, I swear he was a Teamster president for like 13 years or something before he started to run into trouble. And the trouble that he ran into is that he had mob connections. He was criminal in a lot of ways, like jury tampering like big crimes. He did time for his crimes. He got a 13-year sentence, but he only served, I think, 3 years because Richard Nixon commuted his sentence.
Oh, good old Nixon.
Interestingly enough, after Nixon commuted Hoffa's sentence, the Teamsters overwhelmingly supported Nixon in the next election, even though previously they had been Democrat, like they traditionally voted Democrat.
Interesting.
Yeah, so a little quid pro quo there, perhaps. Jimmy Hoffa's nemesis was Bobby Kennedy, because of how hard Bobby Kennedy was going after the mob. And Jimmy Hoffa testified in front of the general attorney, Robert Kennedy, in 1957 in a Senate hearing. And famously, like, did the whole high school boy, like, I'm just scratching my face with my middle finger in your general direction. I think the reason Jimmy Hoffa comes up a lot in conspiracy, like, I don't think it's not a conspiracy. He worked with the mob. That's well known. Like, it was obvious he had mob connections. He often is cited as a man of mystery because of what happened to him.
And what did happen to him?
Exactly. What happened to him? So the story goes that on July 30th, 1975, Hoffa, he's now out of prison and he is trying to claw his way back into a high position in the union. At that point, like obviously when he went to prison, the union got somebody else as president. Jimmy Hoffa wants his spot back. He sets up a meeting on July 30th, 1975. To meet with a couple of gentlemen who may or may not have been members of organized crime.
They were.
Tony Pro, a.k.a. Anthony Provenzano, and Tony Jack, a.k.a. Anthony Giacalone. I think that's how you pronounce his name. He set up a meeting in a Detroit restaurant to meet with these two gentlemen.
And they had giant glasses of Beverly on the table?
They never showed up.
Oh.
So Hoffa, pissed that he's been stood up by these guys, he leaves the restaurant. He makes a couple of calls from a payphone, one to his wife to bitch about the fact that he'd been stood up, and one to his friend to bitch about the fact that he had been stood up. And then he heads back to his own car that's parked in the parking lot of the restaurant. Hoffa was seen speaking to three unidentified men in a burgundy-colored Mercury Marquis. Now, this car description happens to match the car that was driven by Joey Jack, Tony Jack's son. Tony Jack, again, being Anthony Giacalone, who was like the godfather of the Giacalone family.
In Detroit.
Yes, in Detroit. Okay, so he's seen talking to three unidentified men in a burgundy Mercury Marquis. He gets into the vehicle without a struggle, and he is never seen again. Alive or dead.
Yeah.
And that's the mystery. What happened to this guy? The mystery ends in the fact that he's dead. They killed him. Like the mob killed him.
Yes.
And actually, he was declared legally dead in 1982. But the mystery comes in as far as what happened to his body.
Right.
I think one of the funniest and one that they tried to prove is that they thought that he might be buried in Giants Stadium. And there was actually a Discovery Channel show called Mythbusters. They did an episode entitled The Hunt for Hoffa. They did scans around the giant stadium with ground penetrating radar to see if they could figure out if there had been a disturbance, if there was a human body buried
right, or some kind of container or something.
Exactly. There were no trace of any human remains. And then in 2010, Giant Stadium was demolished and still no human remains popped up. So Jimmy Hoffa was not in Giant Stadium. There was another report that he was buried on a Savannah golf course that had been popular with mafia bosses.
Savannah, Georgia?
Georgia. In 2012, in Roseville, Michigan, police took samples from a suburban Detroit driveway after a person had reported witnessing the burial of a body there around 1975, which jived with Hoffa's disappearance. But they found no human remains. A man named Joseph Franco claimed that Hoffa was pushed out of an airplane while still alive over the Great Lakes.
Whoa.
Yeah.
In 2021, February of this year, there was an article in the Daily Mail, a very credible newspaper organization. The title of it was, Jimmy Hoffa is buried in a steel drum at a New Jersey landfill. And this story stated that he was buried at this landfill site after he was murdered by the mafia following a meeting in Detroit in 1975 that you talked about, claims the mobster's son. The mobster in question here is Paul Capola Sr. And his son, Frank Capola, is the one who's claiming to know that Hoffa's buried here in this New Jersey landfill site because he says his father was involved in the burial. He said that his father put the body of Jimmy Hoffa into a steel drum that was then buried on this site that used to belong to his father and is now owned by the New Jersey Department of Transportation. It's a local waste management site to store unused dumpsters. Capola says that he didn't name Hoffa's killer, but he says that it was not Frank the Irishman Sheeran. So there's another possible site. Now, they say that they did, again, the ground radar testing in this New Jersey landfill site, and they did find containers buried. It was a site used for dumping. At one point, it was a Superfund site, which, as we remember from our Denver airport, is this super contaminated site where waste has been buried.
Yeah.
And that's probably what they were seeing here. But at after they discovered the things that were buried, they said that they had reported the information to the police for further follow-up. Mm-hmm. So I guess we'll see what, if anything,
comes
from
that. So at
this
point, it's up to the New Jersey Police Department to decide if they want to go dig it up.
Yes, dig in this
highly contaminated. I don't think it's Jimmy Hoffa
in New Jersey.
Yeah, because I don't think that the Detroit mob had any reason to drive him out of Detroit.
Yeah, why would you?
I do think that this is what happened to Jimmy Hoffa. Once Jimmy Hoffa got into that burgundy marquee, he did the number one thing you're never supposed to do. Never go to a second location.
Yeah.
So Hoffa was taken to a house nearby. Some people think it could have been the house of a racketeer and Teamster union affiliate named Leonard Little Lenny Schultz. Or possibly to the house of the Detroit mobster Carlo Licata. Both of those houses are within a 1 to 2 mile range from the restaurant where Hoffa was last seen alive. So either of those houses kind of makes sense that they could have gone there. And I think both those houses were places where Hoffa had attended meetings before.
Is this based on either confirmed or anonymous reports of somebody claiming this is what happened?
Yes, and I will get to that. He's taken to a house nearby the restaurant and he's given 2 shots to the head. That part is also probably true because it's like so mob style, right? And then they think that Hoffa's corpse was incinerated at Central Sanitation in Hamtramck, Michigan, which was a Detroit mob-owned trash company. The sanitation belonged to Motor City Mafia lieutenants Peter Bozzi Vitali and Raffaele, aka Jimmy Q Quasarano. As for who did the actual shooting, in 2004, author Charles Brandt wrote a book called I Heard You Paint Houses, Frank the Irishman Sheeran and Closing the Case on Jimmy Hoffa. In this book, the author alleges that Frank Sheeran, a professional killer for the mob, confessed to killing Hoffa. According to Sheeran, he was in that car. They picked up Hoffa from the restaurant. They drove him to a house in Detroit. He was shot twice in the back of the head, and then he was burned in an incinerator at the dump. Interesting thing, I Heard You Paint Houses. That title is a reference to mob code speak, which basically stands for, do you still kill people for a living?
Wow.
I heard you paint houses.
That would be an unfortunate misunderstanding if you were just trying to get someone to paint your house.
Right. That's according to this author that Frank Sheeran confessed to the killing of.
Is Frank Sheeran the Irishman? The Irishman of Martin Scorsese's
yes.
multi-hour opus.
That is correct. That
Did
is based on that story.
Did you see that?
I haven't watched it yet.
I also
Although having read
it.
More about Jimmy Hoffa, I'm now interested in watching that. Although I read a thing that said it's great cinema, terrible history.
Huh.
Yeah. So I guess they take some liberties with their storytelling.
Yeah.
But I did think it was funny that Tony Jack, when reports first got back to him about Hoffa's disappearance, that he had never showed back up after the meeting was supposed to take place at the restaurant, Tony Jack's response was, maybe he took a little trip.
Wow.
I'll tell you one thing I know about Jimmy Hoffa, though. His middle name was Riddle. James Riddle Hoffa, which is kind of badass.
Is he Voldemort?
So Steve S.
Thanks for your question.
Thank you for your question. We really appreciate it. And if you have a question that you want us to ramble through, then all you have to do is reach out to us. You can reach out to us via email at theparanoidstylepod@gmail.com. Or if you're on the social medias, you can reach out to us on Instagram. We're at theparanoidstylepod. On Twitter, we're at style_paranoid. And if you don't have a question, that's okay. You can still reach out to us. You can let us know if we've made any mistakes that you've noticed, or if you have a topic that you think we should cover, or just
want to say, hey.
And if you do reach out to us with a question, you might get to hear your question answered on the next Extemporaneous Style.
Absolutely.
And then you'll wish that you had just Googled it instead. And then also, if you have some time and you like what you hear, follow us, rate us, and review our podcast.
That would be awesome.
I always wanted to do a blind taste test.
Me
stuff.
Too.
Yeah. I've always wanted to do the thing where you're blindfolded and then someone feeds you something
no.
And you try and guess what it is.
Uh-uh.
How come?
I have trust issues.
Okay.
I just feel like that would be gross. Have you heard about...
Oh,
I
like dining in the dark.
Yeah, completely in the dark.
Yeah.
It's weird. I just had this flash like... I swear there's a restaurant where you eat in the nude and it's not the same. But my trust issues are acting up again.
When you dine in the dark, all your waiters are nude, but you don't know it.
I didn't order sausage. I wouldn't want to do that, but I would be up for another taste challenge. Yeah. I think that would be interesting.
I want to do it because I want to know how good my palate actually is.
I don't think mine is good.
Obviously, if you're picking Diet Pepsi as your number one.
We could try vegetarian bacons. Stay tuned.
Something to look forward to on future extemporaneous style episodes.
If you loved this.
The vegetarian bacon blind taste test.
Although I feel like that one's going to be kind of harder to do because they're very different looking.
We'll have to get over your trust issues. We'll have to blindfold and take a taste of each thing.
Well, all right.
And I will be in the nude.
Oh my God.
That's funny.